When my friend Ben shot his girlfriend Larice through the head before doing the same to himself, I blocked it out, or tried to. I couldn't really talk about it, besides the overwhelming grief. I didn't want people to even know about my relationship with Dr. First, that this accomplished local oral surgeon considered me, Chuck Miller, his best friend.
I just want him gone. I just want my boyfriend to move out. I can't.
What happened?
I don't want you.
Larice, desperate to be rescued from Ben. You can actually hear him groan in the background as a Pinellas County, Florida 911 dispatcher tries to assess what's happening. It's 4 minutes to 11 p.m. on Monday, June 3rd, 2019, and it was the last time Larice's voice was ever heard. In this podcast, you'll hear what I subsequently learned over the course of the past year, why law enforcement, the Medical Board of Florida, and the judicial system profoundly failed Larice and an unknown number of other women. Here's another of Dr. First's girlfriend's victims, quietly responding to a state prosecutor more than 4 years before Larice's death, confirming his violent attack on her while Ben was out of jail on pending charges that included domestic battery and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon.
Remember, he gets arrested, he gets out on bond, and in January, he and you are in contact with each other.
Yes.
And at that time, were you supposed to be in contact with each other?
No.
No. Was that by court order?
Yes.
Okay, was he at your house or were you at his?
At my house.
And you get into a verbal argument?
Yes.
And he's throwing you around your living room, correct?
Yes.
She escapes to her bedroom and locks the door. However, Dr. First knows how to get in. He simply says, if you don't open the door, he's going to kill her two young children sleeping in their bedrooms. She goes on to acknowledge that Ben threw her phone in the toilet, then threw her around the room before he started to choke her on her bed, and she ultimately escaped by breaking a window and flagging down some neighbors.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Benjamin First.
What city do you live in?
I was living in downtown St. Petersburg.
What kind of employment are you involved in, sir?
I'm an oral maxillofacial surgeon.
How long have you done that?
For 14 years here in Palm Harbor.
I want to take you to November 28, 29th. Do you recall that day of 2014, or those days?
Yes.
On that particular evening, Ben was arrested after a late-night altercation in downtown St. Petersburg. I attended the trial. It didn't buy the story his attorney presented. The possibility that the two bearded men with big knives assaulted Ben while perhaps looking to rob him. No question, one of them basically tackled Ben on the street. A bank camera videotape showed that, but not what they alleged beforehand. Seeing Ben aggressively grab his girlfriend by the shoulders and shove her against the wall.
A divorce?
Yes.
Did you have a large amount of money on you?
$1,700 and change.
Why is it that you had a large amount of money on you?
Well, first of all, I earned it, and I lost my credit because we were in a nasty divorce for a couple of years, so I didn't have credit cards, so I had to carry money for gas, food, etc.
Where do you carry the money on you on that evening? Was it in your wallet? Was it in your front pocket?
It was in my right front pocket.
Was it a large wad?
Fairly. It was, you know, $1,700. Yeah, so.
Do you remember the denominations? If you don't, that's fine.
Hundreds, I believe.
While in the bar, did you observe two gentlemen with beards?
Yes.
Tell us about those gentlemen.
They appeared to be with a group of people. They all looked like bikers. They both had chains and large knives and sheaths open carry on their right hips.
When you say large knives and sheath, how large of a knife would you estimate they were?
6-7 inches, like K-bar type of knife, like a military knife, that kind.
Did both of them have those knives on them?
Yes.
At any point, did you point that out to anybody?
Ben and his attorney are basically pleading self-defense. He had to defend himself. He was the victim. He
decided to leave.
Do you recall what y'all were arguing about?
Yes, months prior, a guy had put a hand on her leg at some club, and we were just arguing about that incident.
What were you upset about? Why would you argue about that?
She didn't say anything, and she was just a little drunk or something like that, but that was what we were just arguing about, that incident, yeah.
So she didn't say anything to the person who touched her?
Correct.
Okay. And as a result of the argument, what happens? Did y'all decide to leave?
We mutually decided to leave. We didn't want to, argue in public, so we were going to walk back to the condo.
If you're like me, you're wondering, they're arguing about a stranger who put his hand on her knee months earlier? Something's not normal here.
Who paid for the bill?
I did.
And how did you pay for it?
In cash.
Did you pull that amount of money out of your front pocket?
Yes.
If you had to estimate, how many feet were the two bearded gentlemen from you?
Two.
They were right next to y'all?
Yeah, right in the, it's a very small bar. It's right in the corner.
Was there ever any altercation inside the bar with the two bearded gentlemen?
No.
Was there any conversation with the two bearded gentlemen between you and them?
Not that I recall, no. So both of you.
The two bearded men with large knives never removed them from their sheaths. The only one who managed to pull a knife or had a reason to was Ben, the victim, of course.
Down the block, would you estimate you went before the altercation occurred?
Probably not even a block, but maybe a block.
Let me ask you, have you had any type of training in martial arts?
Yeah, about 6 months.
Yeah. 6 months worth of training?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how to defend yourself?
Yes.
What kind of permitting do you have with the state of Florida with regards to concealed weapons, knives and or guns?
I've had a concealed weapons permit for over 20 years.
Were you carrying a knife on you?
Yes.
Where was that knife?
It was a small, about an inch and a half knife that was in my wallet.
So you're walking down the street. Tell us what occurs.
We were walking down the street. We were holding hands but arguing, and then we stopped, and I was facing her, and then all of a sudden I got punched and I pushed, and I was down on the ground, and then there were two guys on top of me punching and kicking me.
Did you ever have any conversation with those two gentlemen, either one of them, prior to you being attacked?
No.
As you're being attacked, what do you do and what position are you in?
I was on the ground, kind of curled up, just because they were punching and kicking me, they were just punching and kicking me, and I was telling them to stop, and then I heard her screaming, and I was in fear for my life. I mean, it was a terrible situation. And then I got my wallet out, and I got the knife, and I just punched one and punched the other, and just to get them off me. And then we tried to get away, and they kept chasing us, and I was calling for the police.
When you say you're calling, were you using a phone or yelling?
Yelling.
Although he was taking some punches and fought back to get away, it had nothing to do with any attempted robbery, nor was Ben seeking the police. Others, including the two bearded men with big knives, sought authorities nearby. With regard to the premise of this altercation, in hindsight, it's pretty clear what Ben did, as abusing women had become somewhat routine for him.
What type of surgeon are you?
Oral maxillofacial.
Okay. So you operate on people's bodies, correct? On their face?
On their face, yes.
Okay. Do you agree that taking a knife and swinging it at someone's head is possible, that it could cause death or serious bodily injury?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know their names to faces, but the first one that was on me was, I believe, the one in the video, and I think he was in the cheek, and the other one had his knee on me, and I just got him in the knee, and the other one in the, it was a crazy.
So when you were swinging the knife at the first victim,
I wasn't swinging anything. I just punched one in the cheek and one in the thigh to get him off me, and then I could have attacked him more, but I didn't. I tried to get away.
Okay, let me just slow you down.
Although Ben wasn't convicted on the assault and battery charges that initially brought him to jail, he did accept a plea bargain for domestic violence with strangulation and tampering with that particular witness you heard from earlier while he was out on bond, that girlfriend who, not surprisingly, refused to testify against him. She had to ride through the legal pressure under oath and consider what Ben could do to her and already had.
When I asked him about the woman's testimony saying that my friend had thrown her around the room and threatened her children, he glossed over it and said she liked it, or maybe she liked it, something to that effect.
She couldn't have liked being thrown around the rooms in her house, having been threatened to kill her children. He skipped that part. My wife Lucy knew how I felt about what I heard at the trial and from Ben afterwards, as well as why I somehow allowed myself to gloss over it too.
You didn't want to think further about it. He was your friend. You wanted to accept his explanation, even if it was implausible. But Ben was ready to hurt anyone he considered a threat to his personal freedom. Any violation of his probation would have resulted in an automatic 10-year prison sentence. No matter what, he was not going to prison.
Dr. First did many things in his life. Most, I believe, were actually pretty good in nature. But the horribly bad tends to bury these fonder memories that I'm sure I had. My wife Lucy saw Ben both ways.
There was something about Ben and his attention, his attentiveness to women, that I think they found very attractive. As the wife of his best friend, I think typically Ben always tried to treat me very well. He was attentive when we had a conversation. It was almost as if he would hang on every word, and he would ask very pertinent, very intuitive questions. And there's something very appealing and something very sexy about somebody who really listens. I could see his appeal to women.
Jill, a server at a local wine bar, Sip, viewed Ben differently. She got to know me and Ben from years of stopping in to eat, drink, and play chess. She told me he reacted angrily, for example, one night when I wasn't there, spewing vulgarities, she later told me, calling her a warmonger, all simply because Jill spoke favorably about his son, Jared, entering the Marines. Ben didn't know it, but Jared did so, at least in part, to get away from him. You'll learn why as you hear from Jared in a future episode. Jared endured and triumphed through the emotional rigors, pain, and anguish of basic training at Parris Island, South Carolina, yet viewed it all as a more than welcome departure from his father. Ben told me he worried about Jared being able to cut it in the Marines, yet expressed pride after his firstborn son of three boys thrived in the Corps. Jill recalled Ben's extreme reaction to her supportive words about Jared as we spoke to her 3 years after the news of his murder-suicide hit the community. The horror of it all was beyond belief to me. Jill wasn't even surprised that Ben would do such a thing.
I don't know why, there's just always something a little off, but I was not, I couldn't figure out what it was.
I hadn't seen Jill nor stepped inside SIP since the tragedy occurred 3 years prior. Many people at SIP and throughout the area knew Ben. I was curious to know how people reacted as I avoided the subject as well as where we had gone together.
No one really wants to know the truth and wants to know that anyone's hurting or in pain. You can't do that. It's society rules, you know? And that's kind of the way that it is. A lot of pressure to be successful, a lot of pressure to, I'll never understand it. But no, and I don't think people talk about it. Those are bad things. People around here only talk about good things. And that's kind of the way that it is.
Although Jill wasn't surprised, I never really viewed Ben as a threat to anyone other than himself, or maybe me when I bluntly told him at SIP that I viewed his moving in with Larice as a way out of sleeping on dental chairs and floors at his remaining practice in Newport Richey. Still, it was a vast improvement from the jail cell he was in beforehand. He snarled at the accusation, tensing up from teeth to fists.
I also knew Larice, who lovingly took Ben in shortly after they began dating. My wife and I celebrated New Year's Eve with them for 2019 at my friend Pat's place.
We picked them up at the condo in Oldsmar, Florida, where they ended up living soon after and dying about 5 months later. My wife Lucy had this to say.
We had met Ben and Larice before, but this was our first time really going out together. Their behavior was over the top, with lots of hugging and touching, like a couple of infatuated teenagers.
Although no one I knew then suspected or told me if they saw the horror lurking inside Ben, I felt uneasy that night. His relationship with Larice was accelerating too fast.
I knew Larice, Ben's final victim, about as long as he did, a little more than 6 months. She was 52, a very loving person who never would have faced her horrible fate with Ben, if not for his status as a doctor, as you'll learn more about in future episodes. Being a doctor meant much more than big money to Ben. It was the proverbial calling card. I'd seen him operate. It never took long for Ben's conversations with ladies to casually turn to what he did for a living. Eyes would light up, like they were shining off the maxillofacial jackpot before them. What I didn't realize at the time was how addicted Dr. First had become to nitrous oxide, and that regularly inhaling supplies from his offices was likely wreaking havoc inside his head and contributing to what must have been an increasingly tormented reality that had built up for more than the 15 years that I knew him, that other Ben. Not the one who choked out women or threatened them at gunpoint, sometimes for days. My intentions were centered on helping Ben, who had paved his own way to a living hell. I wanted to help him out of it. A best friend from years prior, Ron, the best man at our wedding, faced something I suspected also raged inside of Ben, bipolar disease. I felt I hadn't helped Ron enough when he spoke to me and Lucy about the affliction.
He wanted to share with us basically is that we probably would never see him alive again. And his explanation of what bipolar, you know, meant to him and his family.
It was frightening.
It was frightening. And I think what made it very poignant is that, you know, our kids were kind of dressed up for Easter and, you know, looking for baskets, and he should have been with his own kids, but he chose to be with us. I think he felt it was really important that he explain to us his condition and plan to kill himself, and it just seemed surreal. It seemed like, you know, we were shocked and trying to think of solutions for him, but he seemed so certain that he was going to, at one point, end it all. What stood out most in my mind is his obsessive thinking about hurting his oldest child, and specifically cutting off his little finger, and how he could not get that out of his mind, and it was like a strong pull, you know, to do it. He never did that, but it was like an obsessive thought that he couldn't get rid of.
He had a flyer, I guess I'd call it, that outlined symptoms of being bipolar.
He did, and he talked about some symptoms that are very, very hard for most people to understand. And one of them is kind of like narcissism, where problems in the world sort of all revolve around you, but he recognized it. And he had three kids and a wife who tried to understand him.
Yeah, it was horrifying. So worrying. I made phone calls to everybody I knew who was acquainted with or family of Ron's, and I felt an extra sense of responsibility in helping Ben get through whatever he was going through, because I didn't want to see another close friend do himself in, because I spoke extensively to Ben about my expectation, actually, of him doing that, given how low he became and what we'll cover in future episodes of this podcast.
He kept a lot from us. I mean, obviously you two were very close. You consistently met up with him to play chess, to have wine for dinner, but he didn't show the side where he was abusive to women and threatening and
downright violent.
And violent. And I think that he chose to share other things with you that really didn't demonstrate how sick he was.
Yeah, and I contrast that with my friend Ron, who was so forthcoming. He said, I'm going to kill myself, you know, 2 years later in a place we used to visit. He put a tube
to the exhaust,
sealed the windows, and stepped inside and listened to a song that was a favorite of his. And that's how he peacefully ended it.
With gun debates swaying this country left and right today, I keep turning back to the trigger Ben pulled on his relatively new girlfriend and himself. How it got to that point. Somehow this prominent doctor with a 17-page rap sheet had permits that should have been permanently revoked somewhere along his violent, drug-addled way, and in every way. From licenses to practice medicine for 20 years to conceal carrying weapons, even after accepting a guilty plea on the domestic violence charge that included strangling a woman, for God's sake. Before Dr. First continued his rampage and returning to oral surgery, he should have been scrutinized meticulously in every manner possible. Learn why what you think would have or should have happened didn't.
As this podcast
delves deep into this complex, multi-layered, and nationally disturbing reality,